With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
This is your captain speaking. We've got clear runway and the weather's fine, but we're just going to circle up here a while and get lucky. No, no, nothing like that. It's just these cash prizes add up quick. So I suggest you sit back, keep your tray table upright, and start getting lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Rental Sports Desk, your 950 KJR Sports Headlines.
All righty, boys and girls, here we go. Headlines on a rainy Monday afternoon, brought to you, of course, by our friends at Buddy's Goodies and Glass. It's always 420 at Buddy's, baby.
Losers.
Let's see. We reported earlier today that the Huskies are hiring Michigan Director of Player Personnel Courtney Morgan for the same role at UW. And now multiple people, including Aaron McCann of the Ann Arbor News, are reporting the same thing. Morgan was at Michigan for 1 year with Jim Harbaugh and spent 2019 with Kalen DeBoer at Fresno State.
Texans quarterback Tyrod Taylor has a wrist injury, so it looks like Davis Mills will be your quarterback as the Houston Texans face the Seattle Seahawks.
You don't say.
How about that? Hawks by 100 in that game. NCAA Final Four set. Bama will take on Cincinnati. Michigan will take on Georgia. Utah is going to the Rose Bowl against Ohio State after thumping Oregon Friday. And speaking of thumping, Oregon got thumped by Miami because Mario Cristobal took off today to be the new head coach of the Hurricanes.
Niners running back Trenton Cannon was carted off the field on the opening kickoff yesterday, has been cleared of any neck or spine injuries. He is dealing with a concussion and remains in Seattle at a hospital.
And we got Kraken tonight against the Penguins at 7 o'clock, 6:30 pregame, the Monday night game, which, by the way, features the current number one seed in the AFC, the New England Patriots. How about that?
Not after tonight.
How about that?
They're going down!
They are at Buffalo against the Bills at 5:15 over on 1090 KJR. All right, well, after a win over San Francisco, it's always fun to get this guy's take on the air. I mean, I'll admit there's not a chance in hell this guy's on the air if the Hawks lose yesterday. But that didn't happen, so what the hell? We'll put him on the show. San Francisco was a decent favorite, I thought, in the game yesterday against the Hawks, and they come here and they lose by 7. They're now 6-6. The Hawks are 4-8. Here to talk about it, our friend from SI, Grant Cohen. How are you, pal?
I'm batting 1,000. I had a great day yesterday. How are you?
God, you love watching this team lose. You do, don't you? Admit it.
I mean, I don't dislike it. It's always dramatic.
Where did that come from, though? Is that like a disdain for Kyle Shanahan, a disdain for Jimmy Garoppolo, the fan base? Because you don't hear a lot of beat writers for NFL football teams that take pleasure in watching the teams they cover go down.
No, it's not disdain. It's a real appreciation and affinity for chaos. If I was covering the Seahawks, it'd be the same way. I'm an equal opportunist.
I got it.
I watched a lot of your Facebook video, which was highly entertaining as you were talking to 49er fans, and I liked it. I really thought I disagreed with only one part, Grant, when you said the Seahawks didn't win, the Niners handed it to the Hawks, and I want to ask you, how is that possible when Gerald Everett basically was the most valuable player for the 49ers and handed them three footballs?
Touche. I was almost saying, is Gerald Everett shaving points? What is going on? I mean, other than him, the Seahawks were really gritty. I don't know what that was. The Niners, I guess I was more focused on them. Three turnovers and a safety and a fake punt that you let. I mean, it never occurred to you that the 3-8 Seahawks might do something desperate like that. They were totally caught off guard. The Niners were probably the most unprepared I've seen them all season, which is kind of inexcusable when you're trying to sell yourself as a contender.
Yeah. Well, I wonder how much different this game is yesterday if Trey Lance is playing quarterback and not Jimmy Garoppolo. What do you think, honestly?
I mean, I don't know if the Niners would win, but it would have been a totally different game. The Niners only win with Jimmy when they run the ball well. And we knew they weren't going to run the ball well because they didn't have Deebo Samuel. And the Seahawks have a pretty good run defense, so you could do the calculations. The only way the Niners were going to run the ball is if they had a running threat at quarterback and they kept them on the bench. And so the turnovers were inevitable. I have no idea what the hell is going on in the Bay Area with Trey Lance. They spent all this capital to get him, and now they act like you can't even mention his name down there. Do you understand what's going on? Because I don't.
No. I mean, and normally when a wide receiver's out, it doesn't make a difference that much. I mean, in a 7-point game, but I'm with you. I think if Deebo Samuel plays in that game, the 49ers probably win. And you went so far as to say that you thought he was the MVP of the league. Tell me why you think Deebo is the MVP of the league.
I think if he weren't on the 49ers, they might have 2 wins right now. I mean, they would have lost to the Bears. And it's not just that what he's doing at wide receiver, it's more what he's doing at running back. You can give him 5 carries in a game and he'll get you 70, 80 yards. He's averaging 9.5 yards a carry. And no one else on the team is really that good. I mean, he is probably the most dangerous ball carrier in the league right now, him or Lamar Jackson. And he doesn't get really that much credit because everyone wants to give Jimmy Garoppolo or Kyle Shanahan the credit when really Deebo Samuel makes them all look good and smart. So if he wasn't there yesterday, so the Niners averaged 2.8 yards per carry, that's pretty much par for the course.
Right. Well, this is a 49er football team that they just can't win against these guys. I mean, the broadcast kept saying that the Seahawks were 16-4 with Russell. It's actually 17-4 if you count the NFC Championship in 2013. So, I mean, this is their kryptonite, man. I mean, is it in their heads down there now, you think? Is it in the fan base's heads?
Absolutely. It's sort of similar, like the Niners have the same thing going with the Rams. They own the Rams and Sean McVay, and Pete Carroll owns Kyle Shanahan. He owns this entire franchise, but really the last 5 years, Shanahan and Garoppolo, and it seems like Carroll does a better job than anyone at shutting down Kyle Shanahan's run game, putting the game into Garoppolo's hands and letting Garoppolo do what he does when he throws more than 29 times, which is lose. He's 7-9 when he throws more than 29 passes in a game. So he's a game manager who makes $27 million a year, is an American great.
Craig Cohen joining us from the Bay Area. Softy mentioned Trey Lance earlier. Why hasn't he gotten more of a shot? I mean, wouldn't they be about where you are right now, about 500, if Trey Lance was the starting quarterback all year?
I think so. And you'd have a guy who's improving, and you actually might even be better than that right now. But I think the Niners really told themselves that they want to trade Jimmy Garoppolo in the offseason, that they gave up so much for Trey Lance that they have to find a way to recoup some assets, and their number one plan is to trade Jimmy. I don't know. From where I'm standing, I don't see any trade value with Jimmy Garoppolo. Do you see any team bending over backwards to get the Niners a first or second round? No.
I think they've blown his trade value by playing the guy. Right.
I mean, if they're
playing Trey Lance for the past month and a half, and Trey Lance is struggling, for example, and Jimmy Garoppolo is walking the sidelines fuming, I think his trade value goes up by not taking a snap.
Right. So there's that. I mean, they've mismanaged that. I think there's also the fact that they don't have a first round pick next year or the year after that. So if they play Trey Lance and he goes through, if he loses and he goes through the rookie growing pains, that trade just got more expensive. So maybe there are reasons. I just don't feel like there are any good reasons. And the fact that they're 6-6 right now with Jimmy G is a joke. I mean, it could easily be 6-6 with the rookie. And the reason they're starting Jimmy is they told themselves they were a Super Bowl team with him. Well, obviously not. Who was running those calculations in the organization?
Grant, Kyle Shanahan's 35-41 with one winning season. Now, it was a hell of a winning season. It was a fourth quarter, you know, disaster from being a Super Bowl championship. But why is he viewed, maybe I'm wrong about this, but I feel like he's viewed around the country as one of the top coaches in the NFL, and he just doesn't have the resume to support that.
It's because of his last name. I mean, frankly, if his name was Kyle Bananahan, no one would really give him the benefit of the doubt. But because it's Shanahan, and especially locally, I mean, his dad was the offensive coordinator the last time the Niners won a Super Bowl. So it feels right here. And I think nationally, Mike Shanahan and the Shanahans have a very large network of media people who adore them. And I think they get positive coverage when he really doesn't deserve it. To me, Kyle Shanahan is the second coming of John Gruden. He's overrated. He's negative. His ego is way out of control, and he places it above the team. John Gruden 2.0, I'm kind of over it.
Well, Grant Cohen's with us, and you actually stumbled upon something. You may not know this, but the Shanahan family name actually 400 years ago was Bananahan. and they changed it.
Shortened it when it came
over.
Yeah,
they changed it to Shanahan.
The rest is history.
Yeah, thinking that maybe one day they'd have some coaches in the bloodline. They don't want to take any crap, so they changed their name to Shanahan. But Grant Cohen with us, and I just wonder this. I'm watching that game last night thinking, did Pete Carroll just end this regime? Did he end the Kyle Shanahan, John Lynch regime? Because when those guys came in, they came in as kind of partners, like the next Carroll Schneider type duo, and it hasn't worked out. Do you see any way that John Lynch fires Kyle Shanahan when this year's over?
I don't think John Lynch has that kind of power, but I think Jed could fire both of them. I mean, the way I look at it is if the Niners push all their eggs into making the playoffs with Jimmy Garoppolo this year and they don't make it, how do you bring Kyle Shanahan back? You just wasted a year that you could have been developing Trey Lance so you could miss the playoffs with Jimmy Garoppolo. That's a fireable offense. Now, you could probably trade Kyle Shanahan. I think that's the upside. He has all this hype. You could trade him the way the Raiders traded John Gruden and get maybe a couple first-round picks from some team that doesn't know better. That would be the upside there.
Love to get your take on the Seattle situation because you're 1,000 miles away, so you got a little different perspective than we do here in the bubble. What do you see happening to Seattle over the next 6 to 12 months?
Oh, it seems like they need to start over with a new coach. I mean, I like Pete Carroll. He clearly is a better head coach than Kyle Shanahan, but some of his offensive coordinators are cringy, and this new guy obviously is awful. I mean, he's making DK Metcalf look pedestrian. They probably need to get a new coach, but it seems like a lot of people would want to coach Russell Wilson. That's a pretty good starting point. Yeah. Also, you guys need to draft a whole lot better. It seems like what's going on there is the culmination of like 8 years of bad drafting. Am I close?
It's only 7. Relax. Take it easy.
Okay.
God, all this hyperbole, man. It's crazy. Were you surprised, Grant, before you go, Grant Cohen from SI, that the Seahawks did not kick the field goal with, what, 6:20 or so to go in the fourth quarter?
Yep.
Would have made it a 2-score game right there. But they went for it. They got the conversion, but they get the fumble by Everett a couple plays later. Did that move surprise you?
Yeah. I mean, not only did they go for it, but they gave it to Everett again. I mean, why would you trust him after the first time that he kicked the ball? Yeah, I didn't understand that. Yeah. What was the interpretation of that in Seattle? Because the Niners, everything around here glossed over that because the Niners lost.
Quick question off the topic. Do you know anything about Kalen DeBoer down there at Fresno?
No.
Okay. I just wanted to...
Do you know who Kalen DeBoer is?
Is that the head coach of Fresno State?
Well, now he's...
He was.
Now he's the head coach of Washington. I didn't know if you'd ever had any runnings down there because we just grabbed him as our head coach.
He just became the head coach of the Niners, by the way.
He must be good then. Niners missed out on a good one.
Yeah, no, I got you. All right. Well, listen, man, great stuff. Always fun to catch up. Best to your pops as well, and we'll talk down the road.
Thanks, man.
I appreciate it. Thanks, guys.
All right, Grant Cohen from SI covers the Niners. He's very good. And, you know, his whole take on where the Seahawks need to go from here with the firing of Pete Carroll, I don't know if I'm there yet. You know, I mean, I'd like to really dive into that when the year comes to an end. Yeah. I want to see what happens in the final 5 games of the year. But I know this, that both of us, I think, agree that the odds of them making the playoffs are very slim. Big long shot, you know, against that happening. So we're likely going to go back and look at where our standards were when the year started, and they're going to miss the playoffs, and that's going to be a problem. The Jamal Adams trade has been an absolute disaster for this franchise. The drafts have not gone well. They need to invest in the offensive line. I frankly think if this team is going to get back to where they were in 2013, and really what I'm talking about is not dominating the league with defense, but I'm talking about just simply contending for a title, they have to fix the line of scrimmage on both sides of the ball. And it starts with the offensive line. I mean, our standards for the offensive line are so low. Anybody who shows up on a Sunday afternoon, I swear to God, I'm not kidding you. Anybody who shows up that can walk and chew gum is given a freaking plaque or a trophy by this fan base. It's unbelievable how low the standards are. And the defensive line, look, I think the front 7 played pretty good yesterday, but I still think you are consistently playing every game with one hand tied behind your back with your pass rush. And Michael Sean Dugar tweeted this out today, the sack leaders for the Seahawks right now. Last year, they had 10 players on their team with 4 sacks or more. Right now, they have 2 on their team with 4 sacks or more. It's unbelievable. And the Dunlap thing, the Adams thing, and Kerry Hyder, right? Those 3 guys were supposed to bring the heat. and none of them have done it consistently. Yesterday was what, week 13, is that right, in the NFL season? Mm-hmm. Carlos Dunlap had his first full sack of the year in yesterday's game. Well, how did that happen?
Well, here's one reason it happened. He played like 10 snaps. I mean, you can't have very many sacks if you don't
play
in the
football. Right, I'm talking about leading up to yesterday's game.
But he hasn't played very much recently,
right.
And I don't understand why.
You know why? Because he wasn't getting sacks. That's why. Maybe they jumped off the wagon too early. I don't know. I'm just saying this, that he was playing a lot early in the year, right?
He blew that tackle up. He sent him into the fourth row in the north end zone.
Well, maybe he'll find something in the final month and a half of the year. But I think, honestly, I know it's not sexy, but if this team wants to get back to where they were, they have to start pushing people around on both sides of the ball, on the line of scrimmage. And you know what? The same recipe goes on Montlake. Same
Absolutely.
Thing.
Absolutely. Well, same I mean, thing. Normally, I have been, over the last month or two, I've been more of the Russell Wilson is more at fault for the sacks than the offensive line. I don't think that was the case yesterday. I thought the offensive line was bad. It was just flat out bad yesterday. So if we can at least get back to the point where the line protects the way they have done much of the last couple, three or four games, and Russell gets it out of his hands quickly like he was yesterday, yeah. Then maybe you got something.
Well, that first half was a disaster from an offensive line's perspective. Yeah. It was like Keystone Cops, like those guys had no idea what the hell they were doing. I remember after the interception by Bobby, which was a great play by him. If you go back and watch the replay, we can talk to Hugh about this. He steps up in the pocket, right in the mess there, and then drops back, and Garoppolo has no idea the guy's even there, and he picks it off. And I remember tweeting after that play, there's no way they can mess this up. Right? And they ended up going backwards and had a second and 43 on that drive. And then they missed the field goal from Jason Myers. So I just think that's where this has got to start. And by the way, I want to make sure that I got this right. The stat on the sack numbers through week 13, right now the Seahawks have two players with three sacks or more. Okay? No, they have two players with two sacks or more. I'm sorry. In Daryl Taylor and Rasheem Green. Last year they had 10 players with two sacks or more, and now they have two. It's crazy. And you know what it is, Dick? For all the back and forth and bickering and bitching and moaning about the defense and how good they are, I will say this, and I said this on the air 2 weeks ago, that with numbers like that, this defense should not be good. No. Without interceptions, without forcing fumbles, without getting after the quarterback, those are three major things that you have to do to be a good defense.
Well, it's a testament to the back seven when you right now, sacks per game, are tied for 30th with the Detroit Lions.
Right.
And yet you're sixth in the NFL in points allowed.
Well, it's the red zone defense. I'm telling you, it's the red zone defense. Yep. It's the red zone defense. It's the red zone defense. It's unbelievable, these guys. And somebody texted in that, well, that's the way the LOB played. No, it's not. Because the LOB had 28 interceptions in 2013.
It's the way this
and
first
they were
Super Bowl
top,
team.
They were top five in the NFL in total yards for 5 years in a row. Exactly.
2005.
Oh, different story.
Yes.
That was 16 years ago.
That was a team that in yardage allowed, they were like 17th, 18th, 19th in the NFL. But in points allowed, they were great because they were so good in the red zone.
Well, we haven't answered the question yet. Is this a playoff team? Is this a playoff team? Because you made it crystal clear in September that the Mariners were not a playoff team. I'm not asking you to compare the two at all. I'm just asking you, you made your proclamations known about the Mariners. What about the Seahawks with five games left to go and two games out?
I feel the same way as I did about the Mariners, but kind of for different reasons. I thought the Mariners were a very good team, but they had too many other good teams around them fighting for one playoff spot. They had Toronto, they had Oakland, they had New York, they had Boston. Just too many really good teams fighting for it where they were a good team and were going to win some games. Seattle's not a good team, but they've got like seven other not very good teams fighting with them. And I think they're going to pass a good chunk of them. And if you would have asked me this question, if they had beat Washington and San Francisco, I would have had a different answer. I would have said, yes, they're going to finish 9-8, and they're going to get into that final wild card spot. I'm telling you right now, I think they're going to finish 8-9, and they're going to be one game out, and it's because they lost to Washington. That's how I think it's going to end up.
Yeah, I think that's where I would go, too, that there's going to be some kind of a buzz, right? The light bulb is going to flicker.
They're going to go on a little run.
Week 16, week 17. It's going to be bzz, bzz, and then people will start to gravitate like flies towards the light bulb, and then right when it matters, it'll poop out.
I saw your tweet today. I totally agree with it. Yeah. They're going to go on a run, and they're going to make people believe, and then they're going to fall just short because of the too many early losses.
All right, 421, we've got a break. What's happening in Eugene? Mario is adios. He's going to Miami. He's done. Oregon needs a new coach. We'll find out what they're doing down there next on 950 KJR. You'll love.
Now back to Softy and Dick on your home for the Huskies and the Kraken. Seattle Sports Radio 950, KJR.
All right, we're back here on a busy Monday. We'll talk to Hugh Millen, talk some Seahawks, NFL, the whole spiel, 5:30 tonight. John Forslundin, who's calling the game for Root tonight.
Is that his name?
Penguins, yes. He will join us at 6:05 before we get to pregame with Mike Benton. But joining us right now after the big news of the day, after multiple beatings by Utah in the span of 3 weeks, Mario Cristobal has said, I don't want to do this anymore. He's cried uncle, and he has escaped the armpit of America for the tropical paradise of South Beach, Florida. Mario Cristobal introduced today on Twitter as the new head coach of the Miami Hurricanes and here to talk about it, how Oregon responds to it. Our friend, the afternoon star of Rip City Radio in Portland, Chad Dewing. Chad, how are you, man? What's going on?
I'm very well, and I would imagine you feel pretty good because I saw your tweet that you put out after the Pac-12 title game. You said, as always, screw Oregon. So today, the chaos. You got to be enjoying that just a bit, Softy.
Yeah, screw Oregon and screw the Niners. And we got some great news on both those fronts this weekend, by the way. Really was a trifecta. Oregon got hammered by Utah Friday. Their coach is gone, and we got the Niners on Sunday at Lumen. So it was a 3-for-3 weekend for Hawk fans and Dog fans. But let's first of all talk about this. The way it went down, the way the whole thing came to fruition, what'd you make of the last 24 to 36 hours down there, man?
With the Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
This is your captain speaking. We've got clear runway and the weather's fine, but we're just going to circle up here a while and get lucky. No, nothing like that. It's just these cash prizes add up quick. So I suggest you sit back, keep your tray table upright, and start getting lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18+ terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Well, chaos, absolute chaos, and I blame mostly, you know, the University of Miami, where they don't really have any leadership or direction, and you've got so many different boosters and the Board of Regents and everyone trying to, you know, have their say in the matter. So they're trying to hold on to one coach and see if they can get a deal done with Cristobal. So I think that's pretty crazy. There were reports that Phil Knight had an offer on the table, an extension for Cristobal, 10 years and $85 million prior to kickoff before the Pac-12 title game. He decided to wait. That upset Phil Knight, and that kind of gave the indication that he was going to consider going back to Miami. And the official contact, according to Rob Mullins, and that came in from Cristobal's camp was on Saturday. It probably started before that, of course, but the decision, of course, came down officially today that Cristobal is going to go back home and be around his mom, who's ailing, and go back to his alma mater and coach football there for the Hurricanes.
How did it affect their play in the Pac-12 title game, if any, or was it just the same matchup issues that we saw a few weeks ago at Rice-Eccles?
Well, I you know, if you're just looking at it on the surface, I think it had an impact. You just look at the interview with Whittingham and Cristobal before the game. Whittingham was calm and collect. He knew that he had the better team, and they were focused, and they were ready to go out and accomplish a mission. And it seemed to be a little bit cluttered with Cristobal. So I think there was some lack of organization, or maybe a little bit of disarray. But the bottom line in that situation, they beat him 76-17 over two games. One thing for certain, Utah is a much better football team than Oregon right now. They physically beat them up. They had more experience, obviously better quarterback play. And it's no secret that Cristobal, as great of a recruiter as he is, not a great, just lit up by Kyle Whittingham twice. So that was a total destruction by a team that's just better right now.
All right, so what does Oregon do now? Where do they go from here? I've been watching people that are kind of endorsing Chip Kelly coming back from UCLA. Let's let Mike Bellotti coach the bowl game against Bob Stoops for old time's sake. What does your crystal ball tell you? Where does Oregon go from here now?
Well, guys, I think this is the fascinating angle to this story and where they're going to go from here. So between, for 50 years, they basically had two coaches in Brooks and Bilotti. And over the last 10 years, they've had four head coaches. Mm-hmm. I think what they've done ever since they moved on from Mark Helfrich and they let go of the staff where they had guys in place for, 25 to 30 years, guys like Gary Campbell for over 30 and Radcliffe and the rest of the guys who have been there forever. They jumped ship from Helfrich, and they went in a totally different direction to jump into top 25 college football, which means you're going to go after the flashy hire, understanding that they're going to use you as a stepping stone to grab a better job. So if they want loyalty, you probably shouldn't go after a guy with strong ties to different parts of the country. But my guess is if you're Oregon, you've got to get past the old. You don't focus on what you had in the past with Chip Kelly or any of those guys. You've got to look to the future, and that means be aggressive. If you want to win a championship, go after the guys who can recruit, because that's where the game is won, guys who can bring in the big-time players, and then you put yourself in a position to make a run at the title. So the names so far that are popping up, if you want to get away from Wilcox or Chip Kelly or some of the guys who have been around the program before, be aggressive. Maybe put that same offer, 10-85, for Matt Campbell at Iowa State. Dave Aranda is getting some interest as well. I think there's some ways to do that. Another guy that would be interesting would be Kalani Sitake from BYU, who, of course, is a good recruiter and a guy who's got a strong connection to the Polynesian community and so forth. I think those are some names to look for if they want to continue to move this program forward.
Or the same names that we talked about for the UW job a week and a half ago.
Yeah, the same names. The same names. And I know you're big on Matt Campbell, and so am I. The same names.
Yeah.
Because if you go back to, here's the problem with Chip Kelly. During his time, he was terrific. His success, as you know, four straight BCS bowl games. He doesn't like to recruit. He's admitted that before. Mm-hmm. So why would you want to bring in someone that's not going to put in the same type of effort like Cristobal, especially when you look down south? And you got Lincoln Riley going to USC, and the way you're going to have to compete in the recruiting game to get that program to the next level. And you could make a sell on, Campbell or Aranda and say, look, you come to the Pac-12, the pathway for you to get to where you want to be is going to be much easier than where you're at right now.
What is the level of angst, the level of worry amongst the always calm, cool, collected Duck Twitter right now that Mario Cristobal is not here anymore?
Oh, it's a total disaster. It's a grease fire, and here's why. Because Duck fans are, like Husky fans, incredibly arrogant, and they want to believe that we got Phil Knight, we got Nike, we are the program in the country, and that's just not the case because of where it's located on the map. It's hard to recruit to Eugene. You're never going to have access to the type of talent that you need down in Florida, Texas, or in the southeastern part of the country. So it's always going to be hard to get big-name coaches, not only to come there, but to commit to being at the program for an extended period of time. So I think their best bet is to pay big money for a guy that's probably going to be here for 4 to 6 years, and then you move on. But yeah. Duck fan, they're bitter because they feel like, they got screwed over once again by Cristobal. Because think about this. Willie Taggart came in, used him for a year. He moved on to Florida State. Cristobal said they'd have to, pull him out of Eugene, kicking and screaming. And here he is 4 years later going off to Miami. So that's just the way the game is played. They made that decision when they fired Helfrich. And you just got to embrace that and realize that you're not going to have a guy that's going to be there for 10-plus years. It's not happening.
Well, you know that this was inevitable with a former Hurricane living in Eugene, Oregon. 3,000 miles away, when that job came open, he was going to take it, and he took it, and it's a great time to take it because he's inheriting the program, kind of not at rock bottom, but for them, it's pretty much bottom. I know they're in a bowl game against Wazoo, but he's not replacing the guy. He's replacing the guy who replaced the guy who replaced the guy at Miami. So standards are low right now. He'll get some time to turn it around. I just love the fact that Oregon fans are squirming down there. So any more of that you can share with us. You can come on the show whenever you want, pal, and just pass along that message. So great stuff, dude. Well, appreciate this. And hey, by the way, what's a bigger dumpster fire right now, the Oregon Ducks or the Portland Trailblazers?
The Portland Trailblazers are a total disaster. And here's the worst part, and you're familiar with this, you and all the Hawk fans. Because here's the thing. You've got a superstar in Dame who is disgruntled. You don't have a GM. The roster's in balance. You got 50 guards on the roster. They don't play defense. Dead last in the league. You've got a rookie head coach. And, oh, by the way, you're trusting Burt Cole to go out and hire a GM? Hey, Jody Allen, sometime you might want to wake up and realize that without leadership, you're going to run this franchise into the ground. What a total joke.
Wow. Oh, geez, are we talking Seahawks or Blazers, man? I'm not sure what we're talking about here. Well, we'll let you guys be the guinea pig, and you tell us how that goes down there, because the Hawks are on, I think, for as bad a season as they've had, maybe a little better footing than the Blazers are right now. All right, Chad, great stuff. Enjoy it, buddy. We'll talk soon.
Thanks,
Thank
Chad.
You, pal.
You got it, fellas.
You got Chad Dewing, afternoon host on Sports Radio Rip City 620 in Portland, with some thoughts on what's happening with the Ducks, the Blazers. We'll get a break. Speaking of fans that are flipping out, let's check in with Niner Nation and Grant Cohen from SI after yesterday's beating, next on 950 KJR.
Coming to you live from the Elliott Avenue studios of Sports Radio 950 KJR. This is Textimonials.
LOL, semicolon parentheses.
Take it away, Dave Softy Mahler and Dick Fain.
All right, Anders is in for Jackson Feltz tonight.
Oh, Anders.
Anders. I need my boff, Anders.
I'm getting out of here.
Jackson doing the Kraken game tonight, is that right? Feltz is on the hockey duty.
Yeah.
And so you couldn't do both? Is that the deal? Or?
Well, I had a soccer practice to coach later this evening.
Soccer practice?
Yes.
Wow.
To coach.
Coach.
What grade?
I have a 16-year-old girls team.
Yeah.
AAU?
Or high school? Yeah, select.
Neither one of us are around, allowed to be around kids like that, so.
Yeah. It makes sense, you know.
Tell us how that goes.
Yeah, we'll do.
Okay? Well, we appreciate you being here. Jackson's got Kraken duty tonight, 7 o'clock puck drop with the Penguins and Kraken. Mike Benton pregame show at 6:30. John Forslundinden will join us on the radio show about 6:05 or so and get ready for tonight's game. But Textimonials every day at 4:45. And that guy, Hugh Millen, by the way, coming up at 5:30. 49451, Coors Light text line, keeping Seattle chill. Anders, what do you got?
Seahawks? Playoffs? Playoffs? Are you guys kidding me? Playoffs? I just hope we can win another game.
Oh, that is beautiful. You know, at some point, Carroll's got to do that. Don't you think? Just channel his inner
playoffs.
Jim Mora. I just hope we can win a game. I mean, why not? Huh? Why not? Don't you think that with the why not mentality, don't you think that played a role in the fake punt and the decision to go for it on fourth down and not kick the field goal? You're 3-8. Why the hell not?
Yes. I do think you play looser when you've got really nothing to lose, and the Hawks had nothing to lose yesterday.
Maybe somebody should have convinced the Hawks from week one that they were 3-8 and they had nothing to lose. All right, what's next?
I believe the Hawks will make a playoff run. This win is the spark and identity stamp they needed. Ooh. Hawks are dangerous when cards stacked against them.
Do we or do we not think the Hawks will make a playoff run?
No!
Okay, well, hang on a second. Because it right now, not only is it really about them, it's about what everybody is doing around them, right? I mean, what are you, 14th of that? Is that right?
Yeah.
15th in the NFC. You got the second worst record in the NFC.
But almost all of them are ahead of them. They're 5-7.
Exactly.
So it's not like we're way behind.
Well, the problem is, though, is that they've all got tiebreakers on you.
Yeah.
Minnesota does. New Orleans does. Washington does. Right? The Rams do for now as well. So you're going to need some help, right? This is going to take a Mariner-esque run combined with a Angels-esque collapse by somebody to make the playoffs.
And that was the difference between this and the Mariners season. The Mariners did everything they possibly could to win the amount of games. I mean, if you'd have told
no
me
help.
3 weeks behind, no 3 weeks before the end of the season they were going to win 90 baseball games, they got no help. Boston played well. Yankees slumped, but then they started winning. Toronto started winning. Everybody was winning at the
end. Who would you rather see in the playoffs? The Mariners or the Seahawks?
The Mariners.
Okay.
The Mariners.
Thank God you said that.
And it's not because I'm more of a Mariner fan than a Seahawk fan. I just want this freaking drought to end.
Thank God you said that. If you said something else, we were going to have a problem. All right, what's next?
What if Oregon goes after Chris Peterson with a truckload of Phil Knight's money?
Well, that would be the only reason why you would do it. Look, I'll just say this. I think at some point in time, Chris Peterson's going to coach again. I would not be surprised if he never did, but I would bet maybe 52-48 that he would coach again one day. I could see him going back to a small school like a UC Davis, his alma mater.
Yeah.
But this is a guy that hated the negativity around college football. If that is the reason why he left, which I think it's a big reason why he left, then I don't see him taking a job like the Oregon situation. I saw him, and you were there too, at the press conference last Monday.
Mm-hmm.
He looked happy. That was the first time I had seen him with his wife in public since he got hired 8 years ago. by Washington. So the guy that I see right now is in a good spot. I would be surprised if he took a job like
yeah,
that.
Yeah, I don't think he's going to take one that's got the scrutiny on him. And I think the whole NIL thing, and particularly the transfer portal.
Right. And you're working with the king of the NIL and Phil Knight.
Yes. I don't think that he's got the 365 desire to recruit kids and try to convince them to come to his school anymore.
Well, I think people just forget, and again, you never say never, how freaking hard college football coaches work. It is insane. And I don't think Chris Peterson is up for that right now. All right, maybe I'm wrong. All right, what's next?
Softy, it's totally you. You're a blithering baboon.
God, I love
that. What is
that
response to?
I think he's in response to the Jamal Adams thing. And maybe maybe I'm the only guy out there that is just completely disgusted by what's happened with the Seahawks and the Jamal Adams. And by the way, this is now the blithering baboon show of record. It was the barking seal show of record. Okay? All right. But it's now the blithering baboon show of record. So I love that. I would much rather have an insult than a compliment 24/7. Please continue.
I think when you have players that are in your crosshairs, you look for negatives, right? I did it with Kyle Seager, right? I looked for negatives. You look for negatives. Hugh looks for negatives for Jamal Adams and probably ignore more positives than you probably should ignore. And I probably ignored more positives with Kyle Seager than
I probably
should.
How many positives are there with Jamal Adams? What does he do well?
Like I said, I think the last, not yesterday notwithstanding, he did nothing in that game yesterday. But I think over the course of November,
that should not be a hard question, Softy.
He had a couple of games where he didn't hurt the team, and I think he actually helped the team.
He had a couple of games.
That's it.
Where he didn't hurt the team.
Where he didn't hurt the team.
Oh, God, I love it. It's amazing how low the bar has become.
I know.
My God.
And I'm not trying to be a defender
of
Jamal
Adams.
That's
fine. Do whatever
you
want.
I'm just not a Jamal Adams hater like some people are.
God. Would you call me a hater?
Yes. Okay. You're not Hugh level, but you're there. Wow. You're in the neighborhood.
It's getting scary, man. All right, what's next?
Cristobal leaving is addition by subtraction for Oregon. Great recruiter, not a good in-game coach.
Right. True.
Well, I think that they were exposed by Utah for their toughness. And by the way, I'm having a really hard time on this Alamo Bowl matchup between Oregon and Oklahoma. I mean, it's the who gives a damn less bowl.
Oh, God.
Right? I mean, they both lost their head coach. They both thought a month ago they had a shot at the Final Four. Now they're in the freaking Alamo Bowl. I mean, who gives a damn less?
Who's going to show up?
Between Oregon and Oklahoma.
That's an impossible game to handicap. Right? Because three-quarters of handicapping a bowl game is who cares more. It has almost nothing to do with talent. It has to do with who wants to be there. And when you have two teams that don't want to be there at all, that's just a stay-away game, man. I'm not putting any money on that game.
Well, you remember by the way, Oklahoma's given 3.5, and the total is 61. I might lean the under in that game. Remember the Holiday Bowl in 2010 when we played Nebraska? Nebraska had no desire to be there.
Well, we did.
And they freaking lost after kicking our ass in September. We got one more? All right, go ahead. One more.
Do you think the quality of play by the offensive line has anything to do with Russell's comments in the last offseason?
I mean,
yeah.
Isn't that kind of obvious that it was? He basically said he was tired of getting hit.
Yeah.
I mean, yeah, it's absolutely attributed to the way the offensive line has played. And man, there were times in that game yesterday where I'm watching Ethan Postick play just thinking, this guy's going to get Russell Wilson killed in the first quarter. And then I'm watching all these centers that, like, PFF is tweeting about all these great centers in college football. And I think to myself, this is just a list of players that we can look at that the Seahawks will not draft.
But could draft.
Okay.
The centers go. The top center usually goes in the second round.
Totally.
It doesn't go in the first round.
Well,
so we actually have a second round draft.
Who's the guy from the Chiefs? What's his name? The center for the Chiefs from Oklahoma, the rookie, he's having a hell of a year for Kansas City. They could have had him, and they took D. Estridge. And look, I saw some signs from D. Estridge yesterday that showed me that this guy might be a pretty damn good player down the road. I am concerned about him staying healthy. He's not very big. He's not exactly yoked. He's a slight guy. But whoever the center is for Kansas City, the rookie starting for them, I think
Creed Humphrey.
Yeah, Creed Humphrey from Oklahoma, right?
Yep.
They could have had him.
Yes, they could have.
How much different would this offensive line look right now if they had a quality above average starting center? Everybody knew they needed one, and they did nothing about it. 4:56. We're going to hear from Pete Carroll. What's the latest on Jamal Adams? Is that part of this, by the way? Coming up next on 950 KJ.
Okay, round two. Name something that's not boring.
A laundry? Ooh, a book club. Computer solitaire, huh?
Ah, oh, sorry. We were looking for Chumba Casino. That's right. Chumbacasino.com has over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Chumbacasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.